S is famous B from the commercials. 4-2-3, get fame. You're listening to the Solo Monster. Sounds off. Call the number.
It's business time, baby.
The Solo Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 498, part 2 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 4th, 2017. I am the Solo Monster. No, that is not a mistake. I recorded an emergency sound off, episode 498, part 1, on Tuesday, because I absolutely could not wait until the weekend to talk about that show from Monday night. And yes, I know I did say that this would be 499 this weekend, and episode 500 would now be next weekend, but plans change. I need more time to get things ready for 500, so we're sticking with our original schedule, and really, it does make sense if you think about it that this would be part two. I tackled Raw, I tackled the predictions for Extreme Rules on Tuesday. On this show, I'll go through the Extreme Rules predictions again, but I'm going to tackle everything else that I would have covered on that show. I can recall only one other time where I did a two-part sound-off. This is not the first time. I believe you would have to go all the way back to episode 65. Way back in 2009, that included my WrestleMania 25 review, including my thoughts on that first Shawn Michaels Undertaker WrestleMania match. So it's been a while, but it has been done before. I'm only briefly going to touch on Raw. If you want my full thoughts on that hot garbage that we were treated to on Monday, which was bookended by two good matches, so I don't want to make it sound like literally everything on that show was hot garbage. The Balor-Bray-Joe triple threat match I thought was good. The Roman Reigns-Seth Rollins match was really good. But if you like your Solo Monster extra salty, then that is the podcast for you. I got a lot of feedback from people saying, oh, yeah, it's been a while since you've been that angry. It's like, well, you know, part of it sometimes is I think when there's something that really irks me, it's nice to have the extra few days until the weekend to kind of simmer and think about it and maybe calm down a little bit. And sometimes, you know, you try to be a little more even-handed, you try to be a little more fair. I can honestly tell you that had I waited until today, and if I did not put that bonus show out on Tuesday, I would have been every bit as angry by that garbage today as I was on Tuesday. It was just a bad show. It was a horrendous segment, and I think you know which one I'm talking about. I think when Mr. Met flipped that fan the bird this week, he was flipping the bird at Raw. Although, on the Mr. Met thing, because people did ask me about that, you know, it's not entirely fair, I don't think, to say that he flipped the middle finger, because the guy only has four fingers. He technically has no middle finger. It is funny, though. I mean, that pretty much sums up the Mets season so far, when your mascot, who has a giant smile, by the way, literally embedded in his face, is now going around flipping off fans. Sometimes I wish Raw had a mascot. Can you imagine that? That Raw mascot would throw himself off the top of the Titantron. I will have an announcement about episode 500 at the very end of this week's show. A lot of you have been asking me about that. What's the plan? What are you doing? You doing anything special? I will tell you all at the end of the show this week what the plan is. I do think you'll like it. It'll be very interactive, put it that way. So you'll want to stick around for that. Keep showing love to Audible. Audible has been a tremendous supporter of the podcast this year. They are still extending an offer to all of the Sound Off listeners out there for a free trial of their service and a free audiobook as part of that trial when you sign up using our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. We had a decent number of signups last week. I will say, though, I wonder if people think that just by clicking the link or punching in the link, if that kind of helps the show in a way. It really doesn't. Just so you know, you need to go through the sign-up process in order to register as an official trial and then get your free book that way. You know, if I have 150 clicks or 200 clicks onto that link in a week and nobody signs up, it doesn't mean anything. So if you do want to show your support for the show, if you just want to get something for free, as in a free audiobook, that is the link to use, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Let's see how many we can convert this week. Tons of books up there, including AJ Lee's book, the Brock Lesnar book, Chris Jericho, Daniel Bryan, Bob Holly. So many different books are up there for you to choose from. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, you certainly may do so on thesolomonster.com. You will find the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. Any donation that anybody makes to me, I am always very appreciative of it. It is certainly not a requirement, but $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout here on this show. I want to say thank you very much. And also, you know, thanks to everybody, especially on the PayPal stuff, because whatever I would normally get from the YouTube stuff that I do on the channel, I just got my latest payment from them, and it's literally been cut in half from what it used to be. So I know everybody has a different story about how it's affecting them. In my case, with the limited YouTube content that I put out there, I don't put the full shows out there, but whatever revenue I was getting has literally been cut just right in half. I don't know if it's going to get worse. If that's the worst of it, I don't know, but I definitely noticed it this week. So these donations are certainly appreciated more than you can know. John, Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, The Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara, there's a name I haven't heard in a while. Hope Abraham's doing well. The Five Tool Player, Adam Bartolo, fellow suffering Mets fan. Tori, All I Do Is Win Johansson. Massgrave Micah Harshaw, the Prince of Pleasantville, Anelio Crockett, Virginia Dynamite, Dwayne Horley, Capital Carnage, Christian Reyes, Michael Maximum Pain Palkowski, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Vicious Vincent Cooper, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, High Roller Jeff Chance, the Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velotto, and Max the Axe Velotto, known collectively as the Sibling Psychos. Hope they like their little tag team name that I've given them. Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Fat Mac, Bubba Waterfield, Steven, Handyman Halistick, The Friday Night Delight, Eric Van Dam, Armed and Dangerous, Adam Gray, Real Man, Renato Lucifora, Cody Heartbreaker Hatch, Skywalker, A.R. Tobin, The Musical Mercenary, Hishem Dahoud, Superstar, Sohail Alamkel. Lucky, got to talk about Lucky. So get this. He is from Dublin, now living in Birmingham, and he has a YouTube channel where he does street interviews every Saturday night on Broad Street. Those of you who live in or near Birmingham probably know about Broad Street. I don't because I've never been there. But he does these interviews on Saturday nights on Broad Street asking questions like, what porn do girls watch? You know, who pays on the first date? Generally trying to make people as uncomfortable as possible. The guy does, by the way, if he wants a second date, then he pays on that first date. I'm just saying. But anyway, you can hit up his channel. Just type in Extra Luck. It's all one word, Extra Luck on YouTube, and it will be the first thing that comes up. If you subscribe, by the way, you'll be entered into a gift card giveaway. So definitely give that a look. Rick Mayhem Malloy, he has a YouTube channel, Total Team Talk. You can check him out on YouTube under the name Total Team Talk V2. You'll find a Let's Play series for a video game called TEW 2016. He fantasy books of all things Impact Wrestling. And those who subscribe to the channel and view the videos, you guys can influence what happens in terms of feuds and roster additions and all that. So check him out. Better yet, check it out tomorrow night while Raw is on, right? You'll probably have a more productive night that way. You'll probably have way more fun doing that than you will watching that show. So thank you to everybody who made a donation. I also want to give a shout out here to Lance, who I'm sure is listening. Lance is a very good friend of the show. He is part of the Sound Off family. And he produced a lot of our early t-shirt designs that you see in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. He lost his mom recently and is going through a tough time. And he would update me periodically on this. I was well aware of the issues that that they were having, and I was very sad to hear that she had passed away this week. And I just wanted him to know that we're all here for him, and we're thinking about him. My thoughts also are with the people affected by the attacks yesterday in London. I was out when I was reading about it on my phone, and I just had this look, like this stunned look on my face. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's like every single week now, it seems like there's just something new, something different, and it just makes me sick. So very, very sorry to hear about that. Lanny Poffo announced that his mother passed away last night at the age of 90. Judy Poffo, the matriarch of the Poffo family, of course, mother of the Macho Man Randy Savage. His parents both were Italian immigrants who came to this country. I know Randy was very close with his parents, especially his father, but he was very close with both of his parents. He helped take care of them. Lanny was too, I would imagine. So I was very sorry to hear about that. Get well soon, Harley Race. Harley Race was in the news, unfortunately, this week. 74 years old. He broke both legs in a fall at his home this week. Now, for anyone to break both legs is terrible, but especially bad when you're 74 years old and probably have all the injuries that he's racked up over the years. WWE.com had the story. He suffered a fracture to his right femur, breaks in his left fibula and his tibia, a spiral break of his left ankle. I mean, he really just messed himself up badly. Three breaks in total, according to PW Insider, in the left leg alone. He underwent surgery on Tuesday to relieve swelling in both legs. He was given four blood transfusions. He had another surgery on Friday to reset the fractures. Those, like I said, are tough injuries for anyone, but it's not any easier when you're 74 years old. So best wishes to him for as speedy a recovery as possible. Now, I did the Extreme Rules predictions for the pay-per-view tonight. Would you believe, like, 2 days ago, I think it was, I was planning my weekend out because I've just had so much shit that I've had to do. And I just, it hit me, even though I did the predictions on the show on Tuesday, by like Thursday or Friday, I had completely forgotten there was even a pay-per-view this weekend. And I was kind of annoyed when I realized that there was, because I was going to do some more planning for episode 500 and some other stuff tonight that I wanted to do, that I've been meaning to do. And now I can't, because we have a pay-per-view, and as I'm sure you guys you know, are well aware, I usually do the post-pay-per-view reviews on YouTube. That is the plan for tonight. That's where you can find my Extreme Rules thoughts when the show is over. And as always, the MP3 link will be in the video description, so please don't ask me, why is there no audio? There's always audio. You just have to go to the video and click the link in the description. You can stream it, you can direct download it, it'll all be there for you. Now, I did the predictions on Tuesday. I'm going to run through them again real quick right here. I just want to give a shout-out to WrestleRumble.com. WrestleRumble, they have their pick'em for all of the WWE pay-per-views. If you go there, you can sign up. First place, if you win, if you come in first place, you get $500. And you get to choose any championship belt of your choice from WWEShop.com. And second place and third place winners each get $100, so it's pretty cool. Check them out. My predictions have not changed. I have Sasha Banks and Rich Swann going over on Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. I have Neville retaining the Cruiserweight Championship over Austin Aries in a submission match with the hope that they can soon transition Aries out of the Cruiserweight division and into something bigger, because I do think that he is better than that. Not that Neville isn't. Neville absolutely is. You know what I was watching the other day? I was watching the Neville-Seth Rollins match, which I think was for the championship. This was on Raw maybe like 2 years ago. What a fun match that was, man. The crowd, they had the crowd in the palm of their hand. Neville hit the red arrow. People thought that match was won. We had a new champion. It was the nearest of near falls. It was so awesome. And you know, it just shows you that, you know, it's not just a matter of you can't have great, exciting matches like that on Raw or on the shows today that you can't really, like, buy into. You know, Neville was a guy who was a fan favorite. They protected his finish, I will say, even to this day. That red arrow has been protected like very few other finishers have in WWE. Maybe the Pedigree and the RKO, but aside from that, they have done a very good job of protecting that red arrow finish. And he doesn't use it as much now as a heel. But at the time when he hit it, people thought we had a new champion. It was a lot of fun. So I know that Neville can hang with those guys. Neville can absolutely go in there and hang with Rollins and Ambrose and Balor. I mean, if Balor can hang with the heavyweights, there's no reason Neville can't. But Aries in particular, but I think Neville's got a good thing going right now as the whole king of the cruiserweights. And so for now, he's fine. You know, he's the king of that division. He's on top. And as they bring in new people, you know, and even people they have right now, like, you know, someone like Grand Metalik. Somebody asked me the other day, where is Grand Metalik? And I think he may have been wrestling on Main Event or something. But the answer is, I don't have a friggin' idea. I don't have a friggin' clue. You know, he was one of the most talented guys in that entire Cruiserweight Classic, and they signed him. And then I guess there might have been some kind of a visa issue, and so there was a delay. But then he came over, and they don't even use him. I never see him on Raw. And he's one of the probably one of the most talented guys they have. So I don't know what's going on with someone like him, but as they bring in new guys, as they bring up maybe people from NXT who end up in that division, again, I could see a Hideo Itami, if he ever gets called up, I think going to the Cruiserweight division. It'll be good to have, you know, a hot heel like Neville there to have great matches with them. Dean Ambrose against The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. The championship can change hands on a disqualification because, as I said on Tuesday, nothing screams extreme quite like a title change on a DQ. I do still think the Drifter gets involved. Maybe Maurice tries and gets thrown out or something, but I think the Drifter pays back The Miz for what happened a few weeks ago, probably hits The Miz, which would actually win Miz the Intercontinental title. I think we're going to see that. We have the Hardy Boys against Cesaro and Sheamus, a steel cage match for the Raw Tag Team titles. Obviously, I'm picking The Miz in that match. In this match, I'm picking the Hardys. I think they're on a roll. As a matter of fact, I think they are pretty much unbeaten since coming back to WWE. I think even in singles matches. I mean, Matt may have lost a match, but I don't think so. I think they've pretty much won every single match they've been in. So they've been protected, as they should be. And I think they'll go over here as well. Alexa Bliss defends her Raw Women's Championship against Bayley in a kendo stick on a pole match. I do think Bayley is going to win the belt back, which I'm kind of indifferent at this point to the whole thing. Alexa will get her rematch even if she loses. As long as they keep Alexa in the hunt, maybe they could do something with her and Sasha. I still think that could be a hot feud. Then that's fine. But Bayley, especially after that segment on Monday, Bayley has just been beaten dead. And she, more than Alexa, needs this win right now. And so I'm picking Bayley. It's the right move to make. If they don't make it now, then it's not good for Bayley. Main event is a fatal five-way to determine a new number one contender to the Universal Championship against Brock Lesnar. It will be Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, and Bray Wyatt. I am picking Finn Balor. He is the person I think is going to win. He is the person I would prefer to see win because I'm intrigued by the idea of a Lesnar-Balor match. Said it before, big guy, little guy. I like that. So Finn Balor is my pick, and that's it. That's my Extreme Rules predictions for tonight. Raw from Monday, I'll just say a few quick words about this. At the time when I talked about it on Tuesday on 498 Part 1, I gave the Raw Twitter poll results, which were not looking good at all. Well, the final results are in, and it got a lot of votes, too. We got over 2,700 votes, which is higher than normal volume for a typical Raw poll. I said people are very inspired when there's something really, really good or really, really bad. And I still think back to that Survivor Series, that awful Survivor Series pay-per-view and main event from 2015. That was when Sheamus cashed in on Roman after Roman beat Dean. And my God, I don't think I've ever gotten that much of a negative response to a poll that I've ever done for a pay-per-view. Yeah, like within less than 24 hours, I had well over 4,000 votes. And it did not look pretty. So we had over 2,700 here, 21% thumbs up, 79% thumbs down. SmackDown this week did almost the inverse of that. SmackDown did 80% up and 20% down. So you talk about the tale of two shows. If you want my full thoughts on Raw from Monday and the This Is Your Life segment and all that, some people found it very entertaining, some people found it very cathartic. I heard from few, if anyone, who really vehemently disagreed with me. You know, some people thought, well, maybe you're being a little too harsh. But nobody who disagreed with me and said that that was a good segment. Not a single person. So I think we could all accept that it was not only a dud, but I think potentially very damaging too, because that segment did nobody any favors, least of all Bayley. And so it's when the segment sucks, and on top of that, it could be harmful to the actual participants, that makes it doubly bad. So that was just a terrible segment. I did enjoy the start of this new mystery storyline with Kurt Angle and Corey Graves, because it's something different. Although, I will say, if it just leads to the return of Stephanie McMahon, any feelings about that I have right now may change very quickly. And we had, like I said, we had a very good main event with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. So if you really look in there and pick a couple of different parts out of it, you can find some good stuff in there. But yeah, the Alexa Bayley stuff, I mean, this was... it was old day territory. Remember the old day segment from last year? This was Trump versus Rosie territory. This was up there with those segments that were just so bad. So bad, by the way, the WWE didn't even put any of it except the brawl at the end. They put the brawl at the very end on their YouTube channel. Didn't show any of the This Is Your Life stuff. Not even a snippet. They just completely cut it out from their own YouTube channel. And you know they wanted to. You know that if the backlash wasn't what it was, they would have wanted to put at least part of that segment up there so bad, because it's that soap opera bullshit that they just love. And they figure the general audience will love. And they're not even really wrong, I think, in thinking that way. I'd love to go... well, actually, I wouldn't love, but to go back and see, like, for example, when the Bellas had their stupid segment with Jerry Springer. I wonder how many views that... I bet you that did, like, a few million views on YouTube. Like, that... people will eat that stuff up. That doesn't make it any better. But you know they would have loved to have put this up on their YouTube channel. Just to get the views. Just to get the traffic. Just to get the clicks. So you need to... you need to really have screwed the pooch on this one to be like, you know what? Let's not do that. Let's pretend it didn't happen, which is exactly what they did this week. They were too ashamed. One thing I did not get a chance to mention on Tuesday, because the ratings were not out yet when I recorded that podcast. That show on Monday night that I raved and I ranted about and had to debate a few people on, that show did the second lowest rating in the history of Monday Night Raw. And think about how long Raw has been on the air for, right? Long time. Second lowest rating ever. 1.75. I say, good. Good. And don't be surprised. I'll call it right now. Don't be surprised if we see the obligatory Vince McMahon appearance sometime in the next few weeks. That's their go-to weapon of choice whenever the ratings get too low. Whenever the ratings drift down into kind of red alert territory, although they haven't been this low, that's when all of a sudden Mr. McMahon returns to Raw, right? You watch. Even if it's not Vince, it'll be Stephanie. It'll be a McMahon. They're going to rush a McMahon on television as soon as possible. And they'll pop a rating. They'll probably pop a higher number for it. And that's all well and good for that week. But that is not going to solve their problems. SmackDown Live. Let's talk about a show that was actually worth a damn this week. It was better than Raw. I know that's setting the bar low enough to trip over. But it was better than what we saw on Monday. They made it official. They announced the very first ever Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Which will feature Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Natalia, Carmella, and Tamina. After the Fatal 5-Way that was scheduled on this show never got started. Instead, all the women came out. They started brawling. The referee could not maintain control. He couldn't kind of sort things out. And I thought this was kind of dumb, to be honest with you, because there was nothing stopping the referee from ringing the bell. It's not like these women were bashing each other in the head with steel chairs. He could have very easily said, ring the bell, right? I mean, if this was meant to be what I assume would have been a Texas Tornado rules match, which is all the women are just fighting, I don't think it was an elimination match, then I don't know why he didn't just call for the bell and start the damn match. I mean, obviously because this was the angle they set up, that's why. But I'm trying to think of these things sometimes from the point of logic, which I know is a flaw in my thinking. But that didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But anyway, it basically was a match, if you think about it. Charlotte hit a moonsault off the top rope at one point onto the heels outside the ring, which was actually, that was the start, if I remember, I think that was the start of this great rapid fire sequence where Charlotte hit the moonsault. Carmella then took out Charlotte with a crossbody. Becky used an exploder on the floor on Carmella. Tamina superkicked Becky. Charlotte then gave Tamina a big boot. And then finally, Natty clotheslined Charlotte. And now all the women were down. And everyone's cheering. That was actually fun. They had cleared off the announce table prior to this. And they had a couple of times, they teased that somebody was going through that table. And then they wouldn't. Then they would be diverted somewhere else. Finally, Charlotte did powerbomb Natty through the announce table. And it broke. I was a little worried it wasn't going to break, but it broke. That got chance of holy shit. Shane McMahon came out, shucking and jiving on his way down to the ring. He called this chaotic brawl amazing, even though they had defied the referee's orders. This great match that he had promoted all week long for SmackDown never started, but he didn't seem too bothered by this. He had a big fat smile on his face. He thought this was great. And instead, he decided to book all of them in the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match at the pay-per-view. So I guess Naomi is going to be relegated to announce duty on the pay-per-view. I don't know. You know, if we're lucky, maybe her glow is radioactive and it'll make JBL too sick to do commentary and he'll leave for the rest of the show. Kevin Owens invited Shinsuke Nakamura out as his guest for his own highlight reel segment at the start of the show. This was not good. Nakamura was not exactly great with what little he had to say. He even got some what chance. Anybody notice that? Got some of the what treatment for the first time here on this show. They were light, but they were definitely there. I heard them. And that's not good. Baron Corbin interrupted. Sami Zayn then jumped him from behind. This led to the obligatory tag team match, which saw Nakamura pin Kevin Owens with the Kinshasa for the second straight time. I'm still sticking with my pick from the prediction show way back in January of Baron Corbin winning Money in the Bank. And I'm thinking Nakamura and Owens probably cancel each other out in that match. Maybe Nakamura has it won and Owens, you know, reaches up and pulls him down and prevents him from grabbing the briefcase. And maybe then they transition into their own feud for the U.S. title. They're already signed for a non-title match on SmackDown this Tuesday. So this little feud is going to continue here. Honestly, I was thinking about SummerSlam. Where do they go at Nakamura for SummerSlam? And somebody had asked me a few weeks ago, would you rather do AJ versus Nakamura at SummerSlam or would you rather do it at WrestleMania next year? And I said WrestleMania. That's whether it's for the title or not, that's a WrestleMania-worthy attraction on that show. And honestly, you know, it's been a few years since I can say we've had that WrestleMania match, right? What was the last WrestleMania match that we had? I mean, you could have, like, Undertaker, Roman Reigns because of what happened after the match. As a match itself, it kind of sucked. So I wouldn't pick that one. You know, I don't know. Off the top of my head, the last 2 years or so, I don't know that there is that one great WrestleMania match that stands out. So certainly, if you match those two up, I think, on the WrestleMania card next year, you've got the chance for something special. But I bring all of this up because I was thinking, okay, well, then what do you do with Nakamura at SummerSlam? And I suppose they could just keep this thing going with him and Owens for a few months and they can feud over the U.S. title. But honestly, I would rather see Nakamura against Sami Zayn, part two in Brooklyn at SummerSlam. Those two had a fantastic match last year in Nakamura's debut in NXT. You could do Nakamura versus Zayn at SummerSlam, and then you can do him and AJ at WrestleMania next year. I think that would work out very well. Still no Rusev on SmackDown Live, even though he had sent in those videos all those weeks ago. And first he said that unless you give me a championship match at Money in the Bank, I'm not coming to SmackDown. Then after a while, I guess he got fed up. Shane McMahon hadn't responded to him. He said, I'm going to be on SmackDown this week to confront Shane McMahon. We've not heard from Rusev. We've not seen Rusev on TV. It's like he just disappeared off the face of the earth. They dropped that real quick. And I guess once they decided to put the title on the Maharaja, that killed whatever plans they had for Rusev. So, poor guy. The New Day is back. They finally debuted on SmackDown. Rusev should have joined the New Day. He'd be back on TV already. He can be their honorary fourth member. They interrupted the Usos. They said they want their SmackDown tag team titles. And in fact, Shane McMahon has granted them a championship match at Money in the Bank. This is why having championship rankings on each show I think would be a really good idea. But the problem is they would never stick to them. They would never adhere to them, or they would for a couple of weeks and then they would be forgotten. TNA tried a ranking system many years ago. I think this is during the Eric Bischoff era, and that lasted all of 6 weeks. It's like, I wish there was a promotion that would, and I'm not talking on the website, like, I'm talking acknowledge it on TV, throw up the graphics, show the top 10, show the top 5, at least give some framework for who gets title shots and why, and then you can adjust them. I've talked about this idea before, you know, if you want to shake things up for your storylines, then that's fine. You take the number 2 seed or whatever and the number 4 person and let them have a match. If number 4 wins, he becomes number 2 on the list. I mean, there's lots of different ways that you can go about doing it. And the idea that the New Day, even though they were the longest reigning tag team champions on Raw, just show up on SmackDown, haven't even wrestled a match yet, and all of a sudden they're in the title match at the pay-per-view, I don't think speaks very well to this tag team division here on this show. We got our latest Fashion Files segment. This one was filmed like an old black and white detective film from the 50s or something. We could hear Fandango's internal thoughts as he roamed around backstage. He wasn't actually speaking, though. He ran into Tyler Breeze, who was once again dressed in drag. He was quote-unquote undercover. I'm starting to have some weird thoughts about Tyler. He seems to be enjoying himself a little too much here, dressing in drag a lot. Someone had rifled through their office. They left things strewn all over the place. It looked like it was ransacked. And so they theorized that this must be because they were getting too close. That is, too close to the tag team titles. Well, yes, they did in fact get close to the tag team titles twice, and they lost both times. Breezango then came out and beat the Colons. Now, why the Colons? Because we were told a bottle of cologne was among the evidence that they found destroyed in their office. So naturally, of course, it would lead to this match here. And by the way, yes, I know it's the Colons. I called them the Colons once. Someone wrote me, "You do realize it's called the Colons." I go, "Really? Wow, I wasn't aware of that. Thank you for filling me in on that." Tyler Breeze had his dress ripped off by Primo. But then later he reemerged in his Hulk Hogan janitor's outfit, has the Hulk Hogan Fu Manchu thing going, and he ended up winning the match for his team with the kill switch. Blandy Orton came out for a promo, and he was talking about how, unless you've been living under a rock for the last 17 years, my name is Randy Orton. Yeah, this promo felt like 17 years. He talked about his family and how they were all about respect and doing things the American way. Orton said he would win the championship back in his hometown of St. Louis at Money in the Bank, or else he may never be able to show his face there again. He went for his douche pose on the ropes to end the segment when all of a sudden Jinder Mahal's music hit. He popped up on the Tron instead. He cut a very dull promo, very paint-by-number stuff here about, Americans and I'm different and all this horse shit. And then the WWE specialty, the WWE trademark here, they let the camera linger on him for about 5 seconds too long. They do that all the time with those backstage segments, and it makes the interviewers look so stupid, which maybe that's their goal, I don't know. But they left the camera on Jinder here a little too long, and it was very awkward. This is probably as good a time as any to mention this other piece of news here that I saw this week. This was maybe the funniest thing that I heard all week. Comes from this week's Observer. Impact Wrestling officials. I should just stop there. Impact Wrestling officials. That's the funniest thing I heard all week. No. Impact Wrestling officials were reportedly told directly from those at Sony 6 in India. That's their partner over there. That the big Jinder Mahal push, that putting the WWE Championship and everything on Jinder Mahal, was directly related to the Impact Wrestling Tour of India this past week. I laughed like Big Show in The Waterboy. I did the Captain Insano laugh when I read that. As if. as if a decision on switching the WWE title is going to be influenced by Impact doing a tour of India. Which isn't to say that WWE does not do petty stuff, but in this case, I don't buy that for a second. Sony 6 may believe that. They may look at this and say, well, it's too much of a coincidence. They may well have said that to the Impact folks, but saying it doesn't make it true. Main event was AJ Styles against Dolph Ziggler. Styles locked on the calf crusher, but Dolph raked the eyes and broke free. He hit a zigzag for a near fall. AJ was on the apron. He went for the phenomenal forearm, but he jumped up onto the rope. And when he did so, Dolph crotched him in the ropes, lost his balance. And when AJ got back to his feet, he got super kicked. I don't know if it was a super kick to the back of the head or a super kick to the side of the head. It was almost like a bullet hit him right in the side of the head. And he pinned him. He got the clean pinfall on AJ Styles in AJ's home state of Georgia. AJ got pinned by Jinder Mahal a few weeks ago, and now Dolph Ziggler. And you should have seen this coming, I guess, once they mentioned that AJ was the hometown boy. That should have been a bad omen for him there. They really want you to think, though, that Dolph Ziggler has a chance to win that Money in the Bank ladder match. The guy has no credibility left, so they had to give him a big win going into the pay-per-view. That's why they did it. I get it. I understand it. And AJ will be fine. It's not like it's a career killer for him or anything like that. But I don't think too many people were expecting Dolph Ziggler to get a clean pinfall win over AJ Styles. And it sucks that it had to be over him, but again, it's fine. And the match was good. Ziggler got himself into some trouble this week with a woman. May as well talk about this now. I don't know who she is. I don't know why she's famous. I've never heard of her before. Her name is Trisha Paytas. All I know is she has a YouTube channel that has 2.7 million subscribers. She has almost a billion views, which is depressing. She posted a rant. She may have been drunk. I'm sure she probably was. Outing Dolph Ziggler as her, in her words, her fuckboy. I guess Dolph has been giving her the zigzag for over a year now. She said they had a one-night stand about a year ago, but she doesn't remember too much about it because she was drunk and she was high. And she completely flipped out on Dolph in this video, I guess for not texting her back in time when they had made plans, or I don't know. But it was enough for her to make an 11-minute video ranting about it. Which I guess if you think about it, is how is it any different if I do a 30-minute podcast ranting about a show as terrible as Raw, right? So I get it, but still, this seemed a bit much. This seemed like an overreaction to, you would think that Dolph Ziggler did something horrendous and horrific to this woman. I actually sat through it. I listened to it because I heard that she had some things to say about Dolph and his career. So I listened to it. And when it was over, it was like, wow. I was just like, she also claimed that there's another WWE guy who's actually married that she's been with. She didn't say who that is. This woman comes off like an absolute train wreck. Her Twitter bio. Look at her Twitter bio. Her Twitter bio says, I'm a mix between Woody Allen and your local hooker. Buy my new album, Chicken Fingers and Lipo, on iTunes. You wouldn't need the lipo, by the way, if you weren't eating those chicken fingers. I'm just saying. But she came out with her own ebook, How to Become Internet Famous. It's like, Dolph, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? The only interesting thing, and potentially newsworthy, and this is why I wanted to, you know, watch the video, even though I really, after about 2 minutes, it's like, this is pretty awful. But at the very end, naturally, it would be at the very end. If it was at the very beginning, I could have turned it off. But at the very end, she mentions that he is planning on wrestling, on leaving wrestling soon. He's not planning on wrestling much longer, which is not a huge revelation. If anything, I was kind of shocked that he signed a new deal with the company the last time. I thought he was out of there. I thought he would leave. Either he was going to hit up the indies, or he would do his stand-up comedy stuff, which he seemed to be doing more of at the time. So I can believe that. I can absolutely believe that he will not resign and that his career is probably winding down in WWE. Pinning AJ Styles on TV, let's be honest, as far as this, at this point in his career, that is the absolute peak of, I think, where he can go at this point. Although, you know, I had an idea. I did have an idea. I was thinking about this the other day. And who knows if Dolph would even go for it. You know, I mean, they'd probably pay him whatever he's making now. I don't think they would downgrade his pay. But I think someone like Dolph Ziggler, and NXT now is very different than it used to be 2-3 years ago. When they would trot out Tyson Kidd. Tyson Kidd was an undercard guy in WWE that was doing nothing. And they sent him down to NXT, him and Natty both, to work with the younger talent, to work with the newer talent. And not only did he work with them, and I think he helped up their game, but it rejuvenated his own career. Tyson Kidd was awesome in NXT. I mean, that was my favorite phase of his career. I mean, I know the stuff he did with Cesaro and all that, but I was loving the hell out of Tyson Kidd and even Natty in NXT and the match Natty had with Charlotte. Like, they really helped those guys out down there. And some of my favorite NXT TakeOver main events, and especially that four-way. I'm sure you guys know which one I'm talking about. I think it was Tyson Kidd, Neville, Tyler Breeze, and I forgot the other person. But there were some incredible matches that he was part of down there. So my point is, I look at someone like Dolph, and I think to myself, man, you know, if you were going to take a WWE main roster guy and, I don't know, demote is the right word, but transition him, slide him down to NXT for a while, I think Dolph would thrive down there. I really do. I mean, I think in that environment, at Full Sail, working with those guys, getting some TakeOver main events to himself, I think that Dolph would flourish. I really do. And I think he can also, you know, help elevate the game of some of the other guys down there. But you look at NXT now, and it's not so much guys like Tyler Breeze, right, who went to Landstorm School, and he did some indie work, but really he started to make a name for himself in WWE. A guy like Tyler Breeze was in developmental for 5 years. Now they're bringing in Bobby Roode, and they're bringing in people from promotions like Noah and TNA and Ring of Honor and places like that who are already established. You don't need to work with someone like Dolph Ziggler. The guys at the top of the food chain now at NXT are people like Bobby Roode and Hideo Itami and Drew McIntyre and Tommy End or Aleister Black. These are guys that they don't have to work with someone like Dolph. I mean, it can't hurt, but NXT is very different now than the way it was 2 or 3 years ago. And I can't really say it's better or worse. In some ways it's better, in some ways it's worse. I could see why they would want to market these stars, you know, for the NXT brand, but I do kind of miss the older days where you didn't have all of the indie stars or people from other promotions. You know, but I guess to a degree they've always had the indie stars, right? Neville was a star in the indies. It's not like they found him in a bushel somewhere, you know? I mean, but I think a guy like Dolph could have maybe at a different time thrived by being, you know, kind of moved down to the NXT brand. And then eventually when he would be called back up to the main roster, you know, he may be better off for it. You know, after having a period of success down in NXT and maybe being a really hot heel or something along those lines. Now, I guess that just wouldn't work. So I think him pinning AJ on TV this week is the peak of what you can expect from Dolph here for his current run. And if, in fact, we are seeing the final months of Dolph, I don't know how much longer he has left under his contract, but if this train wreck here is to be believed, then he's on his way out. And I think he can make quite a bit of money for himself on the indies. I mean, Jack Swagger, I've seen people like Jack Swagger commanding thousands of dollars for an indie shot. I mean, if that's what Jack Swagger could get, God bless him. Dolph Ziggler could go out there and make a shit ton of money. I don't know if he would go to a New Japan or something like that, but he can do what Cody is doing, and he can go all around, and he can work his own schedule and work big matches on the indie scene, and then do stand up comedy or get into acting and do other things because he's a talented guy. There's no reason for him to just sort of toil, especially if he's not happy in WWE. You know, I mean, stand up for yourself, put your foot down and say, you know what, I'm done here, and then go do something, man. You're 37 years old, you're not getting any younger, you still have quite a few years left. They don't have to be spent toiling away in WWE, and who knows, you go away 2 years from now, 3 years from now, yeah, he's 40, but Dolph comes back, maybe he's a bigger star for it. Maybe that's the best course of action for him. John Cena, speaking of big stars, he is seemingly on his way back. He didn't directly come out and say this, but he posted a tweet this week that seemed to indicate that he might be returning on the July 4th, of course, very patriotic episode of SmackDown Live. So July 4th may be John Cena's return. And if it is, Jinder, my friend, I would be keeping eyes in the back of my head if I were you.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, they already changed the theme song for the show. The other one lasted like a month. Now it's some kind of death rock theme. So, Rest in Peace, Rage. That was the name of the old song. I'm going to have to change my intro again now for this segment. The first female WWE referee since the 1980s made her debut Thursday night at an NXT live event in Florida. PW Insider reports that her name is Kennadi Brink. She is a trainee of the Team 3D Wrestling Academy. She did wrestle a match against Nikki Cross at an NXT taping earlier this year. She officiated two matches on Thursday night. The first was a women's match between Mandy Rose from Tough Enough and Ruby Riott. And the other was a men's match, which is kind of unique. She refereed the match between someone named Kishan Raftar and Lars Sullivan. Lars Sullivan is the new name they have given to Dylan Miley. So perhaps we will get to see her reffing some matches in the Mae Young Classic in the next few months. Tommaso Ciampa, the news is in, the injury news that is, and it ain't good. A torn ACL in his knee. I believe he's already had the surgery for it. If not, it will be any day now, but I think he already did. And injury like that is probably, I think you're looking minimum 6 months and possibly as many as 9 months. So 6 to 9 months is the time frame out. He did come out here on this show. He opened the show. He came out on crutches. Came into the ring for his big in-ring promo, his big explanation of why he did what he did at TakeOver. Why did he turn on his tag team partner and best friend, Johnny Gargano? And he mentioned the injury that he had suffered a few days before TakeOver, which actually was a legit injury, a completely different injury. He mentioned that. And the reason he brought that up, and I thought this was very clever, what they did here. He mentions the fact that a few days before the TakeOver show, he gets hurt. And there's some debate now about whether or not he's going to be able to go. How hurt is he? Is he going to be cleared? Is he going to be able to wrestle in Chicago? What do you do? Do you cancel the match? This is terrible timing. And the chatter online, and I saw it on Twitter, I saw it in our Facebook group, I saw it all over the place, was, well, they could just get somebody to replace him. You can put Johnny Gargano in there and team him up with someone else against AOP for the tag team titles. And as an example, I saw a lot of people suggesting Oney Lorcan, as though Oney Lorcan is, you just gotta, nobody will notice the difference. They look so much alike, although one has a beard and one doesn't. But they're both bald and they're both white. So you just slide Oney Lorcan in there. Nobody will know the difference, and he's a good wrestler, which he is. And I don't doubt, by the way, that if you were to put Oney Lorcan in there and team him up with Johnny Gargano, that they would have also had a very good match. But this bothered Tommaso Ciampa, this chatter about how, well, you can just replace him with someone. You can replace him with an Oney Lorcan or someone like that. And I thought that was so clever, the way they weaved real life into his explanation of why he did what he did. It wasn't some kind of cliched, well, you know, Johnny was getting a better reaction than me, or, you know, we've seen this storyline so many times. How many times have we seen tag team partners turning on each other? And it's hard. It is sometimes hard to be creative and come up with new, clever, unique, creative ways to explain why someone turns on someone, because everything in wrestling has already been done 1,000 times. But in this case, they took real life, they took this real life injury and this real life frustration over what was being talked about online, and they weaved it into this, and he just, you know, he felt as though people were not giving him enough credit. It was almost as though he became an afterthought. Well, I guess I'm easily replaceable. and it pissed him off. It hurt his feelings, and it made him very angry. So then during the match, I still don't know what spot it was on. It might have been when they did the double dives off the ladders, and it almost looked like Ciampa killed himself because he kind of overshot the splash through the table. I think it was through a table or another ladder, I forgot. Might have been a ladder. But anyway, there was a spot in the match where he heard a pop in his knee. And he knew he was hurt, but he also knew, I ain't quitting. Quitting is not an option here. We got to finish this match. And then they did, and they lost. And it was at that point that he realized he knew how hurt he was. He knew the knee, his knee was just completely screwed. And he had not forgotten about all this chatter in the days leading up to the show about him being replaced if he was hurt. And at that moment, he made the decision that I'm going to do to Johnny Gargano what he would end up doing to me. I'll just beat him to the punch. Because Johnny Gargano is probably just going to go find another tag team partner if I'm out for 6 months. So he turned on Johnny Gargano. He said, it's not my fault, it's the fans' fault. And it's Johnny's fault. And I just thought this was very well done. I actually did not expect this to be the explanation when he came out here. And the idea that people were treating him like an afterthought, and so he had to do something to show people, I'm no afterthought, I think is pretty cool. What's not cool is the fact that he's got some momentum right now. He just had this hot heel turn that ended the TakeOver show. They were in the main event, and now he's out for possibly 9 months. That's just horrendous. Pete Dunne beat Danny Burch with the bitter end. Very good match. Dunn is, I've said this before, a lot of people have said this, but I'll add on here that Dunn is a total star. There's just something about this, as a heel, there's something about this guy. Again, I know he's on the short side, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's very talented. And I think there's big things in his future, so long as the people, the brain trust in WWE can see it, and if they could recognize it. Although he should spend all the time he needs to at NXT, because I enjoy seeing him in NXT, and I have virtually no faith in their ability to, you know, look at this guy and actually see the potential that's there and then push him at a level that he should be pushed at. Pete Dunne going to the main roster, for example, and ending up in the cruiserweight division would be just awful. So let him keep doing his thing for now, but the guy's a total star. After the match was over, he cut a promo talking about the fact that, you know, I had to sit back and watch a boy carry around this UK championship since January, but not anymore. The history of this UK division and this title begins with me. It begins with the Bruiserweight. Andrade Cien Almas lost to Cesar Bonani from Brazil. Almas beat on this guy for 5 minutes straight, and then out of nowhere, he gets rolled up for the pin, for the upset. Almas was very upset about this for all of 30 seconds, and then he had an attitude like, eh, whatevs. Apparently his new gimmick is that he doesn't take winning and losing seriously. It's no big deal to him. So basically Andrade's gimmick is that he's a member of the creative team. They showed footage of post-takeover, after Hideo Itami had lost to Bobby Roode, fair and square. He was very upset in the locker room, he threw a hissy fit. He was throwing chairs around, he was cursing or pretending to curse, and they kept bleeping it out. Cassius Ohno's back there trying to calm him down. He kind of got up in Cassius Ohno's face at one point. It was an ugly scene, but, you know, they didn't come to blows or anything. He didn't attack Ohno, he just kind of walked off. So then they showed footage from earlier today of Itami in the parking lot shaking hands with Ohno. I guess kind of making up with him and apologizing, I don't know, but they were shaking hands in the parking lot. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, man, the parking lot is not exactly the best place for Hideo Itami to be hanging out, if his history is any indication. And you would watch this and think, okay, clearly this is going to lead to a Hideo Itami heel turn, and maybe that's what he needs, right? Hideo's a vicious guy. Kenta is a vicious son of a bitch. And we really have not had a chance to see that. Part of it is he's been hurt so often, and we haven't seen a lot of him. And then part of it also is, you know, he had to tone down things a little bit coming over to WWE. But if you watch this guy, his past, his matches in Japan, he is a vicious SOB. And so as a heel, if they allow some of that to come out and allow him, I mean, not to go in there and stiff guys and injure guys, but just allow some of that old Hideo Itami, some of that old Kenta to come out, that might serve him well. But I was watching this and I'm thinking to myself, you know what would be a sweet little swerve to all this? I'm watching these two guys in the parking lot. It reminded me of the parking lot angle from a couple of years ago when somebody, some mystery assailant laid out Itami and hurt his shoulder, took away a year and a half of this guy's career. That was the storyline. They never really concluded that storyline. It's kind of just, you know, dangling there, open-ended. They want you to think Kevin Owens was the person who took him out, but they never actually said it was Kevin Owens. And wouldn't it be something here if this didn't lead to an Itami heel turn, but it actually led to Cassius Ohno going heel and revealing that he was the one who laid out Hideo in that parking lot a couple of years ago. And I don't even remember if that was before or after he had been let go. I guess it doesn't really matter. He had been with NXT before he got let go. Just a brain fart that I had. It would be kind of interesting, I think, to see. Because, again, I think most people would expect Itami to be the one to go heel, but maybe it's Ohno in the end, and they can actually give us some closure to that storyline, and it would give Itami a real reason to be pissed off at this guy, because, like I said, he took away a year and a half of his career. So, just a thought. Main event had Cassius Ohno, speaking of which, teaming up with Roderick Strong, beating Eric Young and Alexander Wolfe of Sanity. Killian Dane went to get involved, but No Way Jose, who we have not seen on TV since WrestleMania time, he came out to stop Killian Dane from interfering, and that allowed Roderick Strong to hit EY with the release vertical suplex into the backbreaker for the pin. Match was fine, you know, nothing special. The Pete Dunne match was good, and I thought the Tommaso Ciampa promo was really well done. Main event, though, like I said, was okay. It sent the fans home happy. People dug No Way Jose when he came out. And Ciampa, again, I said it before, but it sucks. It just sucks that after the turn and everything else, all the momentum he has right now, now branching off as a single star, that he's going to be gone for an extended period of time. In 2 weeks, Asuka will defend her NXT Women's Championship, by the way, in a rematch against Nikki Cross and Ruby Riott, but this time it will be an elimination match. So that's coming up in 2 weeks. And now, it's time to say something nice about Impact.
Say something nice about Impact.
Before I say something nice about Impact, a criticism, if I may. All this talk about the GFW titles here on this show, the GFW World Championship and the GFW Tag Team titles, no one cares about GFW. No one has any sort of emotional connection to any of the GFW initials, the GFW brand, the GFW wrestlers, because most of the talent they already have are well known from other promotions. It really just feels like Jeff Jarrett came back here, he came into Impact with the idea of turning Impact into GFW as a way to legitimize the brand, because if he didn't, he'd have to accept that the last 3 years of his life have been a complete waste of time. So when they mention all of these meaningless GFW belts, it's like, how many people honestly care? I'm willing to bet not very many. Now, as for something nice, which is the whole point of this segment, I thought El Patron and EC3 had a fun little cage match there in the main event. Patron did one insanely stupid, dangerous move. He did his double, you've seen him do the double foot stomp in the corner where the guy's upside down in the Tree of Woe. Well, he did that here, only he climbed up, not to the very top of the cage, but near the very top of the steel cage. And he jumped down. Now, just doing a double foot stomp from that height is dangerous enough. What I thought was insanely stupid and reckless and dangerous was, on his end, the injuries that he could have sustained. Forget EC3. Coming down from that height with a double foot stomp of all moves, he could have easily ruptured his Achilles. He could have tore up his knee. I just thought that was really dumb. That's a dumb move to be doing from that height. And then he hit a frog splash and he got the win. So El Patron will meet Lashley at Slammiversary. So they're doing a champion versus champion match, Impact versus GFW. which might actually mean something if GFW wasn't a dead brand to begin with.
Say something nice about Impact.
Lucha Underground. My first Lucha Underground review in probably, what, 5 months? 6 months? It's been a while. This is the mid-season premiere for Season 3 that we had here on Wednesday night. They did open with a recap of the Johnny Mundo Mac storyline. Johnny Mundo, of course, is the Lucha Underground champion. The Mac had earned a shot at the championship. And on the last, I believe the very last episode before that we saw back in January, it would have been, I think they had a match that Mundo might have won through some chicanery with the Worldwide Underground. Anyway, I thought we were going to get the all-night-long match that we were promised before the break, but they decided to kind of break the season there and save the Iron Man match for the comeback, which is what we had here on this show. This was a one-match show, and their version of the Iron Man match is called all-night-long. They don't call it a 60-minute Iron Man match. It's just the length of the show, which isn't even 60 minutes. Realistically, it's like 40 minutes or 45 minutes, but it goes the entire length of the show, no other matches. And the championship was on the line between Johnny Mundo and the Mac. I loved how, now when they open the shows, Lucha Underground, they have the band. Bands will sometimes alternate. You'll have a different band every few weeks. This week it was Metalocci, and they were doing the their mix of music there. And I like that. It makes for a nice little atmosphere there. I realized in seeing Metalocci here how much I had missed this show. In 2 weeks, I may not give a shit about Metalocci, but here it was nice to see them. So we go right to it. Melissa Santos makes the announcements. Both guys are already in the ring. They don't even get entrances here. And the match begins. And Johnny Mundo went up very quickly, very early here in this match. In fact, he went up two falls to none very early on over the Mac. So as the match goes on, they do an injury angle with Johnny Mundo. I thought this was great. So Johnny sells an injury. I think it was a knee injury or an ankle injury. I think it was. And they really were playing this up. Now, my first thought is, okay, obviously he's faking it. But I will say they did a pretty good job of trying to make it feel legit and trying to make it feel real. And the referee's down and asking him. And Mundo is clutching his ankle. And the match kind of comes to a screeching halt for a while. They have a trainer come out to check on Johnny. And it really does look like the guy is hurt. They come out, they put like a splint or something on the ankle. The Mac wants to know what's going on. Finally, the Mac sees that, oh, this is serious. He goes over to almost like, I don't know if they shook hands or embraced or something. But, you know, the Mac sees a guy go down to an injury. He's a good guy. He's got a good heart. And he's not going to start, you know, stomping on him or taking advantage of that or anything like that. The Mac fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. And as soon as the Mac then turns his back, and they had a backboard out there and everything. They were going to cart Johnny Mundo off. As soon as the Mac turned his back, Johnny Mundo went. He attacked him. He hit a DDT onto the board. Got another pin, by the way. So now he's way up on the Mac at this point here in the match. Although the Mac might have already had a fall. But now Johnny's up like 3-1, maybe it was at this point. Ton of heat for it. Johnny's now up on his feet doing jumping jacks. This was so great. It was just such a great heel move, such a dick move on a part of somebody, frankly, who's a total and complete dick. So I thought this was great. So then they brawl outside the ring, and the Mac is not happy at all about being deceived by Johnny Mundo. They brawled up the stairs. So if you've seen the temple, you know the setup where the guys enter from. They brawl up the stairs. The Mac now is attacking Johnny with the board. He actually strapped Johnny Mundo to the backboard. Now, they're at the top of the staircase, and Johnny is strapped in. This actually looked like fun, I'll be honest with you. I did that many a time when I was younger. Me and my friends, we would be... It wasn't a staircase like that high. Sometimes it would be like the top of a driveway that had like a steep hill or a steep ramp or something. And we would do, like, when it would snow outside, you know, you can grab anything. You can grab a piece of cardboard, create your own little, surfboard or whatever, and just, you know, go sledding down the driveway or down the staircase. I did do that once. So I'm watching this. I'm like, man, this actually looks like a lot of fun. He pushes Johnny forward, and Johnny goes sliding down the stairs. People going nuts for it. When he goes down to the bottom, he actually picked up Johnny, who was still strapped to the board, and flipped it over, so Johnny landed on the concrete floor right on his face. That didn't look like fun. But I actually thought this whole sequence here was a lot of fun to watch. Mac hit a stunner, which is his big move. He got a fall out of it. Johnny Mundo did the old Scott Hall sell. There you go. Easy for me to say. He did the old Scott Hall sell for the stunner and was pinned. And the funny thing is, whenever the Mac would score a fall and would start to crawl back into things and get a little bit closer to Johnny Mundo, the fans would break out into a chant of Return of the Mac. I actually thought that was great. So now Johnny Mundo is just trying to get the hell away from the Mac. He goes to run. Now, he doesn't run up the stairs. He runs, there's like a little corridor next to Dario Cueto's office. He goes to run backstage. Well, the Mac goes to run after him. Well, when the Mac goes to run after him, all of a sudden, out crawling from underneath the ring is Johnny Mundo. So it's like, what the hell? Saw Johnny Mundo go running off. Who was that? Well, it turned out to be PJ Black. PJ Black was dressed up just like Johnny Mundo. He was a dead ringer for Johnny Mundo. Especially if you just looked at him from behind with the hair and everything, he looked exactly like him. And so as soon as, he came circling back, here comes the Mac. And the Mac, of course, gets attacked by Johnny Mundo and by PJ Black. Now they're double teaming this poor bastard. Son of Havoc came out to even up the odds. He had the old Singapore cane, as they call them here in Lucha Underground. They don't call them kendo sticks. They're Singapore canes. That's they used to call them that back in ECW. That probably had to be around the time that the American guy, I forgot his name. There was this incident where I think it was an American citizen was over in Singapore. I think it was an American citizen. And he vandalized something. It wasn't like he did something that was so heinous, but the punishment for it was you got lashes with a Singapore cane. You basically were caned. I forgot if it was 10 times, 25 times, whatever it is. I remember that from when I was younger. And I think in ECW, that's kind of where the whole concept of the Singapore cane came from. If I'm wrong, then somebody will correct me. But I vaguely remember that. So anyway, Son of Havoc has the cane. He's whipping these guys. He's trying to even out the odds. And Son of Havoc then knocks on Dario Cueto's door. And so we see Dario for the first time here in the second half of Season 3, the greatest authority figure on any wrestling show, with William Regal a close number two. And Havoc wants Cueto to give him a beverage, and so Dario gives him some water. And he's like, fuck that, I don't want water. And the fans are chanting, beer, give him beer. And so Dario goes back in. He's an up scale classy kind of guy. When we see him drinking, he's got his brandy and all the bottles and all the, you know, fine liqueur that he's got there in his office. So somehow, for some reason, Dario Cueto had these cans of basically PBR sitting in his office. He gave Son of Havoc the two cans. Son of Havoc breaks open the beer cans and pours them on the Mac's face. And this gives Mac just a second life. It's like if it was a video game, right? And you kind of look on the ground to pick up things that are going to give you more health. If it were the Mac, he would be picking up beer cans. This gave him new life here in this match. He jumped up to his feet. He started caning Johnny Mundo. He started caning PJ Black. And they set up a pair of tables next to each other on the outside of the ring. So somewhere in all this, Mundo and PJ Black regain the advantage. Okay, I don't remember at this point. I know Johnny Mundo was up. I don't remember exactly by how many falls. He was up by one or two at this point. So the heels now get the advantage. Now they get a little too cocky, because even though the baby faces are down, they don't take advantage of it. So what do? They look up where Metalachi is, the band. They're performing up in the band pit up there above the entranceway. And they're like, come on, play some music for us. So Metalachi begins to play some music, and Johnny Mundo and PJ Black start dancing and being dumb. And one of the members of the band is using the maracas, but it turns out that, in fact, they are not a member of the band. It is Sexy Star, who is in disguise, and Sexy Star, after using the maracas, goes diving off the balcony up there and wipes out the heels. So that was cool. So then The Mac, then manages to tie things up. How does he do that? he hits a sitting tombstone pile driver to Johnny Mundo off the apron through the tables. You would think that this guy would have a broken neck after this. But instead, he just kind of rolled him inside. He got a pinfall and knotted things up here in this match. So things are progressing here. We're kind of getting close to the end of the show. Johnny Mundo brings a table into the ring. The Mac brings a ladder into the ring because why the hell not? Mundo was able to eventually get the ladder set up. I've forgotten it. Was the ladder set up against the corner? I think the ladder was set up on the ground, and I think he put the Mac on top of the ladder. Anyway, he went for the end of the world. Starship Pain. Mac rolled out of the way. This poor fucker landed right on the ladder. That looked like it sucked. It sucked to be Johnny Mundo in that case, I'll say that much. Mac then gets the ladder, he sets the ladder up. He puts Johnny Mundo on top of a table. So there's a table in the ring, he very gently lays Johnny Mundo on the table. He chopped him or something, but anyway, Mundo's laid out. Mac now is going to climb the ladder, which is bad news for Johnny Mundo. As Mac is climbing, out comes, it looked like PJ Black, it turned out to be Ricky Mandel. Ricky Mandel is a secondary character on the show, hasn't really been involved in any major storylines, but I guess Stryker said, oh, he's like Johnny Mundo's biggest fan, and he was kind of dressed up like Johnny Mundo, so I don't know if he's just like a lackey now for Mundo, or if he's going to be part of their little worldwide underground group with PJ Black and Jack Evans, I don't know, but there he was, holding the Mac's leg, trying to prevent him from climbing the ladder. Son of Havoc and Sexy Star, they take care of Ricky Mandel. So, up to the top of the ladder goes the Mac. He climbs all the way up there. So now he has positioned himself on the interior side of the ladder, right? He's propped himself up there. He's not, like, on the very tippy top of the ladder, but he's near the top. And he's standing there. People are going nuts. The announcers, you know, Matt Stryker is going nuts. And off comes the Mac. He jumps off the ladder, and he, with all 300 pounds of him, because Mac is a big boy, okay? You might call him a Big Mac, actually. That's a good name for him. Big Mac comes jumping off the ladder with the old lowdown splash that D'Lo Brown used to do, crashes through Johnny Mundo through the table. Place is going ape shit. You got Matt Stryker on commentary saying, come on, come on. Vampiro even is like, oh, come on, dude, go make the cover because time is ticking down. We got less than 10 seconds left. So the Mac slowly makes his way over. He covers Johnny Mundo. Referee Marty Elias drops down to count the three. The only criticism I have of this match was I don't even know if you can call it a botch, but it was very obvious. They were trying to time it just right. They could not get the timing down just right. And the referee was counting very noticeably slowly. Because the whole thing was, he's going to count two, time is going to run out, and Johnny Mundo is going to win because time expired. And that's exactly what happened. So he kind of held up his count a little bit, counted 2.5, but then time ran out. People booed. They made the announcement that time had expired. It was a draw. Therefore, Johnny Mundo is still the Lucha Underground champion. Dario Cueto then comes out of his office. He says, well, no, 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 no. Wait a minute now. He goes, we're not ending this match like this. This match can't end in a draw. He goes, there must be a winner. And everyone gets all excited because you would think, okay, he's going to restart the match. It was very obvious that they were not going to restart the match right then and there. The show is over. Instead, he says, next week. And as soon as he said next week, even the announcers were like, ah, come on. And of course, people booed. Even though these were probably the same people who were going to be there for the next taping anyway. But anyway, he says, next week, you guys are going to go at it one more time. This time there must be a winner, and I don't care if it goes all night long again. And I will say this, as much fun as I had watching this match, I wouldn't mind if they went out there next week and did another all night long match. Now, it might be challenging to come up with more creative spots. You don't want to just repeat the same match. But I enjoyed the hell out of this. This was so much fun to watch. And I think part of it is the fact that Lucha Underground has just been away for so long that it might have actually freshened the show up a little bit for me. It's not like I wasn't enjoying the show before. But I'm so happy to have this show back after that shit sandwich that we had to eat on Monday night. And that's a big part of why I think I am grateful to have this show back to review, because it is a lot of fun. And I know some people have emailed me, well, I'm not as into it as I was the first two seasons. I kind of compare it almost to The Walking Dead in a way. I hear and I read people online, I used to watch The Walking Dead, but then the show got ridiculous or it got boring or it got this or it got that, and I don't watch anymore. I don't know. I've been watching The Walking Dead since day one. I still watch The Walking Dead. Now, is The Walking Dead as good as it used to be? Probably not. I don't know that it's at its peak form right now, but I enjoy the hell out of the show. I've stuck with the show. I don't watch the show and come away from it feeling bored or angry or anything like that. So yeah, I've been one of the people that has stuck with The Walking Dead. I'm one of the people that stuck with Lucha Underground. And I know not everybody digs all the supernatural stuff and all that, but you know what? We didn't get any of that on this show. This episode was one match for the entire hour. There was nothing supernatural or anything like that. It was just a fun, exciting, professional wrestling match with a hot crowd, with a lot of emotion. By the time this thing was over, and the Mac, by the way, gave Johnny a stunner at the very end, and he posed with the championship, and he got this great ovation. By the time the show was over, Mac came across like the biggest babyface on the entire show. He came across like a huge star. And I'm very much looking forward now to the rematch next week. I doubt that it'll go the whole show again, but you know what? I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't complain. Lucha Underground knows their shit. When it comes to these like big stipulation matches, they've done the Grave Consequences matches, which is their take on the casket match. These guys know what they're doing when they do these steps, because more often than not, they get very creative with it. I enjoyed the first all-night-long match they did with Johnny Mundo and Prince Puma. I enjoyed that match as well. What I appreciate is they really go out of their way to make them as crazy and as creative as they can. The one thing you can't really say about these matches when they do them, and it would be very easy to have, you have one match for the entire hour, for it to get dull and boring. I don't get any of that out of this. It's anything but. They're always keeping you, interested. They're always doing crazy stuff. And by the end, the only thing that really matters is that people are going nuts for it. It's time for your mailbag questions. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please, when you write in, some people didn't do it this week, please include your name and where you are from, unless you're in the witness protection or something. I would appreciate that. This is a cool letter I want to open with here from Reese, longtime fan of the show. I wanted to share it here. He said, "You may not remember me, but I've been a longtime listener and a fan of yours. I believe I've listened to nearly every podcast that you've done. The last time I wrote to you was after Sound Off 213, the WrestleMania wrap-up show. I shared the reaction that my three-year-old daughter Serenity had to the Rock concert and Rock's usage of the words lady parts, and how she had become a big Rock fan." Rock the wrestler, I assume, not rock music. Although rock music is awesome. "Well, Serenity just turned 8 years old last month, and I thought it would be fun to update you on her wrestling preferences. She did eventually reach the John Cena phase. She named him as one of her three boyfriends. Now at 8 years old, you'll never guess who her favorite star is. Goldust. She literally goes insane when Goldust is on TV. Goldust is far and away her favorite wrestler. It actually started with both Goldust and Stardust. Serenity had a question for you as well. Do you think Goldust is awesome?" Oh yeah, of course I do. Goldust is fantastic. Especially now. She gets to see the old Goldust. Old Dust. Anyway, Reese says, "Since the last time I wrote you, her mother and I have welcomed two new wrestling fans to the family. Aiden is 3 years old and likes all of the giant, scary wrestlers." So he only likes three wrestlers, huh? "Aurora is only a few months old, so it remains to be seen who she ends up liking." So that was from Reese. I love hearing stuff like that. And I actually do remember when Reese emailed me the last time. It's funny, some of the things I remember and the things I don't, but some things just sort of stick with me. So that was cool. Thank you for sharing that. Jake from Wildwood, Missouri. "I was watching Raw clips, definitely not the whole show, and noticed that in Elias Samson's song on Monday, one of the lyrics was, 'An A-list favor I must repay.' Do you think the Drifter will get involved and help Miz win the Intercontinental title at Extreme Rules in exchange for Miz giving Samson the win on Raw a few weeks ago over Ambrose?" Very astute observation. I did not notice that about the lyrics. That could be because I try not to pay attention to everything on that show. But yeah, I did my Extreme Rules on Tuesday. I did them again at the beginning of the show here. And I said, I think the Drifter gets involved and I think he probably hits Miz. and helps Miz win the championship. And if this were a different time, I would say he not only gets involved, he breaks his guitar over Miz's head, but I don't think you're going to see that anymore, at least not in WWE, because of the whole concussion thing. So he's got a guitar. It would kind of make sense for him to bash it over someone's head, but I don't know that we're ever going to see that again here. Trey from Norfolk, Virginia. What do you see as the biggest women's matches possible for WrestleMania 34 for each brand? For Raw, I think I still think it's heel Sasha Banks against Bayley, and maybe they'll do it at SummerSlam. But if not, I think that's I look at the Raw brand right now, and I see that probably as the biggest singles match anyway that you could probably do. You know, maybe you do Sasha and Alexa at SummerSlam, but you save Sasha and Bayley for WrestleMania. And as far as SmackDown goes, I think the biggest match that they could probably do would be Charlotte against Asuka. They bring Asuka up. Hopefully she goes to SmackDown and you do that match at WrestleMania. We got a question here from a former NFL star, some of you may know, former NFL star Adam Carriker. Played for the Rams and the Redskins. He's a fan of the podcast. He tweeted me the other day. He said, Goldberg was my favorite wrestler as a child. Intense, strong, and explosive former defensive lineman. We've gotten to know each other fairly well, but Brock Lesnar kicked out of the jackhammer at WrestleMania. I can't remember that ever happening before. Has anyone ever kicked out of the jackhammer? And I responded back to him, I said there was a match on Nitro. I don't remember the date. It had to be sometime in 99 because it was after Goldberg's streak had come to an end, which was the end of 98. Goldberg had given Hogan a jackhammer. I don't even know what kind of match it was. There were a bunch of people in the match. But Goldberg gave Hogan the jackhammer, and I think Kevin Nash was supposed to break up the pin, but he was too slow, and Hogan kicked out. Kind of like WrestleMania 8. Hogan hit the leg drop, right? Sid, the belief is that Papa Shango was supposed to interfere, but he was too slow, and so Sid kicked out of the leg drop. Kind of a similar thing. Anyway, I knew this because, not that I was a huge WCW Monday Nitro fan in 99, by that point they were already on their way down, but the clip used to be online. It was part of some kind of like botch reel that somebody had put together. Technically though, Hulk Hogan is the answer. Hulk Hogan kicked out of the jackhammer. I thought Brock may have kicked out of the jackhammer in their first match at WrestleMania 20, but I don't think that's the case. It might have been a spear that he kicked out of, but I don't think he kicked out of the jackhammer then. So Hulk Hogan and Brock Lesnar, I believe, are the only two people in history, at least on TV anyway, to have kicked out of the jackhammer. Brianna, apparently from Parts Unknown, writes in, a lot has been made about the Alexa Bliss Bayley This Is Your Life segment on Raw this past week. People are even going as far as to say that the segment was the worst in Raw history. While I would not go that far, in your opinion, what is the worst segment in Raw history? That's funny, when I got Brianna's question and I pulled it out, I didn't have to, it didn't take me very long to think of an answer to this. And yes, Alexa and Bayley, as horrible as that was, it was not the worst segment in Raw history. And there have been a lot of just awful, terrible segments, just not entertaining segments, some segments that are offensive. The one that I think takes the cake, easily, worst segment in Raw history, you talk about offensive and uncomfortable and not entertaining in the least and exploitive and all that stuff, is the Melanie Pillman interview. They did an interview. Vince McMahon did a live interview on TV the night after Brian Pillman died. And he had his wife, Melanie, on TV via satellite. So this was not an angle, okay? They were not acting. This was not an angle. This guy really died. And he left behind a wife and five kids. And so Vince McMahon has the wife on television the next night. And she's clearly, she should not be on television. I mean, she just lost her husband. She can barely compose herself. She can barely keep it together. They zoom in on her crying. You know, Kevin Dunn and all those jack-offs there, they're zooming in on this poor woman every time she's, she starts to get hysterical. And Vince, at like the very end of the interview, he just goes, have you had time to think of, now that you're a single parent, have you had time to think about what you're going to do to support your five kids? You know, it's like, what an asshole. This was Vince McMahon at his worst. This was Raw at its worst. That segment never should have been conceived. It never should have made the air. It still gives me douche chills thinking about it to this day. You could talk all you want about Trump and Rosie, and you can talk about This Is Your Life and Katie Vick and all the awful TV segments they've done. You know, Vince McMahon talking to the East End Kroenke impersonator when they, you know, wouldn't let Raw be at the, what was it, the Pepsi Center. Like, there's been a lot of bad TV on this show, but this is just worse than all of it. Because this goes far beyond just a bad TV segment. This was bad judgment, and that never should have made the air. James from Los Angeles, our old buddy Deadpool. It's been 2 years since WWE had its last pointless King of the Ring tournament. What if there was an 8-man King of the Ring within the Survivor Series pay-per-view? 4 wrestlers from Raw, 4 wrestlers from SmackDown. The winner is crowned King of the Ring and earns the number 30 spot in the Royal Rumble match. See, now that's interesting. That's an interesting twist that I had not thought of. Now, in the past, I had pitched the idea, and I've given up on this. It's not going to happen at this point. But I always thought, first of all, why are they not doing War Games? You know, they created the Elimination Chamber, kind of like a poor man's War Games. But I always thought when Survivor Series started to really lose a lot of its luster, and you know, it wasn't really much of an attraction anymore, you get rid of the elimination matches and you make Survivor Series all about War Games. I mean, the names, they fit like a glove. So you have War Games at Survivor Series and you do 5 from Raw, 5 from SmackDown, and you just have at it with the 2 rings. That was always my idea. I thought that'd be a lot of fun. So in this case, what you're saying is you do a King of the Ring tournament during the pay-per-view, even though you don't call it King of the Ring, it's Survivor Series, but the winner becomes number 30 in the Royal Rumble match. I like that. I like anything they could come up with that somehow ties these shows together and makes them feel important. Instead of just randomly assigning, you know, I want to screw this guy, and guess what, buddy, you're going to be number 30 in the Rumble. I mean, how many times have we seen that? So the idea that somebody could actually earn the spot, because why wouldn't you, right? Why wouldn't you want to be number 30 in the Rumble? I like that. I like that. And I always had a soft spot for the King of the Ring. I know why they got rid of it. I guess it wasn't a draw. But you know what? Now with the network, there's no reason not to bring it back. I would be okay with them bringing it back as part of Survivor Series. I would be okay with them bringing it back as a one-off network special and doing it the right way, doing the entire tournament in one night. There really is no reason now for them not to with the network. They could easily bring it back if they wanted to. And now with the brand split, you're right. They could take 4 from Raw. And they could take 4 from SmackDown. If they want to have a 16-man bracket, they could do 8 from Raw and 8 from SmackDown. And make sure at the end that there's something tangible. Not just a stupid trophy, but, you know, something tangible on the line. Jad from Bromley, London, England. My question is regarding the annual Warrior Award at the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. As anyone with ears and with an ounce of intelligence in their brain knows, this award is not exactly what the Warrior had said he wanted it to be. While I think it's a very nice thing to do each year, I think at its core, this is just a marketing tool so WWE can further their brand. Well, the entire Hall of Fame is a marketing tool to further their brand. That's the only reason the Hall of Fame even exists. This Warrior Award is no different. He says, one thing I'm not too sure many people have considered is that Warrior's wife Dana is the one who willingly goes along with it and presents the award every year. Unless Vince McMahon finally had one of those Men in Black tools created, she too would be aware of that this is not what her husband had said he wanted the award to be. Do you think WWE flashed their checkbook at her to get her to go along with their alteration of this award? Nah, I don't think so. Who cares? Like, they're going to flash a checkbook because they want to have an award that's not what he wanted it to be? They don't have to do that. I don't think that's what happened at all. I honestly think the company loves having this sort of, they love having her as this sort of ambassador. And that Warrior's, and I'm just going on my gut here. I don't know the woman, obviously. I've never met her. But I think she enjoys having that relationship that her family has with the company. I think she saw the way that they welcomed her husband back with open arms in New Orleans, how nice they were and the way he was honored. They made a statue for the guy and everything that they did. And the fact, you got to remember something. It wasn't just that they made up with the Warrior and it was a nice weekend for the family. He died. He died like a day or two later. So all of this happened in one fell swoop. He got welcomed back. They rolled out the red carpet for him and his family and his daughters, the whole family. And then a day or two later, he dies. And so the family had to, you know, the company had to be there for the family then as well. So I'm sure that the company showed them a lot of love and a lot of support. Anything you need, just let us know. And actually, if I remember correctly, I think I could be completely wrong about this, but I think I vaguely remember reading that the company was, they had sent someone to the house, I think for like a week or something, to be with the family so they weren't alone, and they were providing food and stuff that they needed. They didn't have to do that, but I believe they did. So think of the way that the company treated this family in the worst possible, in the best and the worst possible time of their entire life. And I think to some extent she might feel indebted to them. You know, oh, because they have a very nice award that isn't exactly what her husband wanted it to be. You know, fuck them. It's like, no, of course not. I mean, they treated that family like gold. And also, you know, there's the Triple H and Stephanie component to this as well. They went out of their way to treat the daughters very well. I just think it's a mutually beneficial thing. The company honors the warrior's legacy. They keep his name alive. They say nice things about him. And don't forget, they also still sell warrior merch, right? Warrior action figures. He's in the video games. I'm sure, I would hope the family gets cut of all of that. So there's that aspect of it as well. Wouldn't surprise me if her daughters at some point wanted to get into the family business, right? If one or both of them wanted to become wrestlers themselves. So having a foot in the door with WWE certainly doesn't hurt. And as far as Dana, she gets to go to the Hall of Fame every year and get all dressed up, and she gets to present an award in her husband's honor to keep her husband's memory alive. And look, I mean, they're presenting an award to all of these great people. I mean, it is a nice gesture that they do. I know you. I mean, look, I can see through it, like a lot of people can see through it, but that doesn't make it any less nice. I'm sure for the people who are being honored, you know, they had Eric LeGrand this year. That's probably a really cool thing for them to be able to be a part of. You know, of course, she's not a stupid woman. She lived with the Warriors. She was married to him, and God bless her, by the way, for being able to live and be married to that guy for so long. She's clearly a very strong individual. She was there in the audience the night that he got inducted into the Hall of Fame and made his speech. She's not dumb. She heard what he said. She heard what he wanted the award to be. WWE had their own ideas. Still a nice thing they do each year. But why would she, why would she not want to be part of that? Why would she want to alienate herself? Why would she want to, like, shoot on the company or be like a Martha Hart or something? Like, it doesn't make any sense that she would be that way. I mean, you really think she's going to raise a stink about that after the way that they've treated her family? There's no way. Joe says, Ahmed Johnson had a reputation for being injury-prone or injuring others and being unintelligible on promos. Well, that is, I will say, you know, it was very difficult to understand what he was saying. I will say that. Jim Cornette mentions that Ahmed was an awful wrestler, but had a particular look that Vince liked and could look good depending on who he was working with. Who on the current WWE women's roster would you say is the female equivalent of Ahmed Johnson? You know what I liked about Ahmed? I have to at least say this, even though I could barely understand his promos and he was reckless and all that stuff. The one thing I liked about Ahmed, I liked his intensity. He looked like he was born with a pissed off look on his face. He came out of the womb with just a scowl on his face. His mother probably looked down and was like, holy shit, like push that back in. Like he's a scary looking guy, right? He had that down pat. Aside from that though, aside from the intensity and looking like a guy that could kill you, again, he was reckless. He hurt himself. He hurt other people. I don't really think that there is a female equivalent to Ahmed Johnson in WWE right now in the current roster. I mean, I can at least understand them when they speak. I can't think of any that are known for, you know, hurting other women. Although Nia Jax did almost kill Charlotte a couple of months ago. So maybe Nia, I guess, maybe would be the closest thing, but even that's a stretch. Dana Brooke, I mean, my God, Dana Brooke is definitely not a great wrestler. But you know, I don't think she's known to be reckless, and, you know, she could talk. I mean, that's not really an issue for her. Emma, I guess, you know, Emma has been injury prone lately, but she's a very good wrestler. Maybe if you take parts of Nia, parts of Dana, and parts of Emma, and you kind of put them together as this, like, Frankenstein monster, you can have some kind of female equivalent of Ahmed Johnson, but no, there's no one person I could think of who fits that criteria. But I will say, I do wish more wrestlers today would show the kind of intensity that Ahmed Johnson did. I think they could actually learn a lot by watching old Ahmed Johnson tapes. I know that sounds like torture, but there could be something that could be gleaned, I think, from watching some of his old stuff. A lot of guys today, you know, the problem is, a lot of guys today look like they're playing the part of tough guy. Ahmed looked like a legit tough guy that you would not want to mess with. And that, I think, is the biggest difference of all. Matthew from Belfast, I've just discovered Corey Graves' tattoo show on WWE's YouTube channel and have really been enjoying it. And it got me thinking, what are some of the best and worst tattoos that you have ever seen on a wrestler? And who do you think could do with having a little bit of ink? I don't know who could do with having some ink. I don't know. I mean, maybe you know, Bailey. Give Bailey a tattoo. There you go. Give Bailey the Mike Tyson face tattoo. Somebody can Photoshop that for me. I think some of the best tattoos, I would say, would be Brock Lesnar. I like Brock Lesnar's back tattoo. Not so much the phallic one that he has on his chest. But the back tattoo, I think, of the demon, I think that's really cool. Randy Orton's sleeves, I think, are pretty badass. Rock and Roman Reigns, they have that kind of half-sleeve tribal arm tattoo. I like that. I think that's cool. You know what? Chris Jericho. Now, it's almost like Chris Jericho, I don't know if he had like a midlife crisis or what. He never had like any tattoos. And then like later in life, he's in his 40s and all of a sudden he's all tatted up now. But I will say one of the tattoos that Chris Jericho has that I really like, he has a Jason Voorhees hockey mask tattoo from Friday the 13th on one of his biceps. That's cool. As far as the worst ones, honestly, the first name that popped into my head was, it was Michael Cole. I thought back to WrestleMania 27. Michael Cole has some awful tattoos, just terrible. Thank God he's fully clothed on most weeks. Undertaker. Undertaker had a pretty bad tattoo. He's got some cool ones, but the Sarah tattoo across the throat, right under the Adam's apple, not one of his wisest decisions. His now ex-wife. So imagine having not just the tattoo, not having the tattoo put across your throat, but just imagine having to have that lasered off. The pain that this guy had to go through. But yeah, don't get your wife or your girlfriend's name tattooed on your throat, people. That's a bad idea. You're just asking for trouble. The one that takes the cake, I've talked about this before, the worst tattoo I think I have ever seen on a wrestler is Scott Steiner's back tattoo. And I said, it looks like the symbiote, the symbiote, whatever, from Spider-Man. It looks like Venom is trying to take over his body or something. It's awful. I mean, I first saw it when he did an indie show at Shea Stadium, City Field, the new Met Stadium. And they did this wrestling show. Goldberg was there, Scott Steiner was there, and I wasn't even close to the ring. I look up on one of the screens, and I'm like, what the hell is that? It, like, completely, his whole back is just covered in this black shit. It just looks awful. I won't say that to his face, but it looks terrible. It's got to be the worst tattoo I've ever seen. Aldo from Belgium. Buy or sell, and we'll end with this. Roman Reigns headlining and winning the Universal Championship at WrestleMania 34 against Brock Lesnar, or Jinder Mahal staying WWE champion until Royal Rumble 2018. Well, I mean, Jinder's got what's done is done, right? Jinder's got the belt. And if Jinder gets over, then I certainly will not hinder the Jinder. I wish him all the best. I hope it works. I hope he gets over. I hope he becomes the hottest heel in wrestling. I have no problem if they want to keep the title on him until the Rumble, then that's fine. I'm buying on that. I'm selling on Roman winning the championship at WrestleMania next year. If for no other reason, not that I hate Roman Reigns, but because it's so preordained at this point, and it's just not what most people want to see. And I said last week, I wish they would do the match at Great Balls of Fire or do it at SummerSlam and just do it there. Just have Roman get his win. He'll become the champion. And then maybe at WrestleMania next year, we'll actually have a main event. We'll have a match that isn't necessarily a foregone conclusion or is, you know, a match that is kind of, you know, different that people could get excited about. It's not that I think Brock and Roman is going to be a bad match. They actually had an excellent match at WrestleMania 31. It's just we're waiting so many months, month after month after month after month for something that we could see coming from 15 miles away that is just going to get this guy booed out of the building. And you know what I mean? Like, I just wish that it was something different that they had planned for WrestleMania next year. And I understand that we're going on a lot of conjecture here. It's not like WWE has officially made the announcement, right? We don't know for a fact that it's going to be Brock and Roman, but we kind of do. That certainly seems to be the match that they're getting us ready for. And I can't tell you sitting here right now that I'm overly excited to see it. So I'd rather they come up with something a little more creative than that. And if they want to keep the title on Jinder until the Rumble and have him drop it there, that's fine. I don't really have this great desire to see Jinder Mahal going into WrestleMania as the champion on the SmackDown brand. But to go to the Rumble with it, yeah, that's fine. I'll buy on that. So I said at the end of the show I would have an announcement to make about episode 500, which is rapidly approaching. And it is this, that for episode 500 of the Solomonster Sounds Off, I will be going live on our YouTube channel to do a live video version of the Sound Off. We're going to live stream it on YouTube. And we're going to do that on Saturday night, June 17th, 8 p.m. Eastern. I didn't want to set the time too late because I want to try to get as many of the UK people and the international people. I know you guys are like 5 or 6 hours ahead. It's going to be late where you are no matter what. But I figure the earlier, you know, the better. Instead of doing it at like 9 or 10, we'll do it at 8. That is subject to change, of course. But right now, that is the plan. Saturday night, June 17th, 8 p.m. Eastern, we'll go live on the YouTube channel for Sound Off 500. And there'll be a live chat going on. We're going to take phone calls. You can call into the show. You can chat in the chat room in real time with other listeners of the Sound Off. I'll be reading your emails, as I always do. Doing, you know, all the shout-outs for donations if you want to get your name shouted out on the 500th show. That's your time to do it. That's your time to shine right there. The format otherwise will be the same. So, you know, I didn't want to change up the show too much because people like the format as is. So it's going to be more or less the same show where I'm talking about, you know, all the key stories from the week. And I'll talk about Raw and SmackDown and Lucha. And we'll do mailbag questions. But again, we'll be live. There'll be a video component to it. You guys can chat in the chat room. You guys can call in. That's going to be Money in the Bank weekend. So I'll be doing my Money in the Bank predictions on that show. You guys can call in. We could talk about your own predictions for Money in the Bank. So that's what I meant earlier when I said that the show was going to be more interactive than usual. Because we've not done this before, right? This will be the first YouTube live stream of the Sound Off that I've ever done. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to it. That'll be, again, the YouTube channel. My username on there is The Solomonster. That's all one word. So if you go there, that's the official channel. You can hit the subscribe button. Go there now and hit the subscribe button. That is where I will be streaming. I want to try to get as many people as I can to listen live. I'm starting this, like I said, at 8 p.m. to not be too late for all the international listeners out there. But if you can't listen live, if you can't be a part of the show, fear not. The audio from that live stream on Saturday night is going to be pushed out to the feed the very next morning as the Sound Off is always. So I'm not doing two shows that weekend. The show will be Saturday night with audio and video, but the audio will be pushed out then the next morning for people who want to listen just to the audio, for the people who maybe missed it and couldn't be part of the show live. So that is the current plan for that weekend of the 17th and the 18th. That's also Father's Day weekend. It'll get pushed out for everybody who wants to listen to it on Podbean and iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all the usual platforms as normal. I'm looking forward to this. I've been planning and thinking about this for a while now, and I had to get all my ducks in a row and, you know, could I pull this off? Do I have all the tools and the equipment and everything? And once I realized I did and I started getting excited about it, I said, all right, we'll move in that direction, because I wanted to do something a little bit different, a little bit special for the show. You know, I don't want to blow my load completely on this one, because we also have the 10-year anniversary podcast in November. I got to save some for that. But this will be a good test as well, because if things go well here, we may do more of these in the future. So mark it down on your calendar. Again, Saturday, June 17th, 8 p.m. Eastern on the YouTube channel. Sound Off 500 goes live. I hope you can all join me. I'm very much looking forward to it. Maybe we'll have some surprise call-ins. You never know. You'll want to hit up the YouTube channel tonight as well. Tonight I'll have my Extreme Rules wrap-up later tonight, early tomorrow morning, sometime after the pay-per-view, which, you know, on paper looks like a good show. We'll, I guess we'll see how they deliver in the end here. But on paper, there's certainly some matches that have potential to be pretty good. And I will be back with episode 499. Next weekend, the prelude here, the penultimate episode before 500, that's coming up next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week. Don't forget you can follow along on Twitter. If I have any updates on the 500th episode, I'll keep everybody posted there. So I will see you guys right back here next weekend for more Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.